Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Triple Threat Tuesday, Ear to the Ground Sports. I'm Ryan Beatty. We got Ryan Edwards on the other end. We got some big topics coming in tonight. Feel free to give a call in. Call-in number is 516-387-1702. Again, that's 516-387-1702. Ryan, how's it going tonight?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Kind of losing my mind without NBA basketball. I didn't really dive into anything over the weekend, so it's weird. You know, I usually work all day and then throw on a game at night before bed, and now I'm getting into movies and stuff. So we're moving on in a different way.
Catching up on the Netflix shows.
Absolutely. There's some good ones out there.
It's been a little bit of a slow week. We had some excitement, which we'll obviously get into with Blake Griffin, but after that, not much.
No, let's dive right into it. This is a topic that you wanted to bring up. It's been all over the media recently. The head coaching hiring process in the NBA, or if it is, there is a process. It seems like it's a gray area nowadays, and I'll just let you start it off. What are your latest thoughts on everything that has transpired in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, for me, with everything that's been going on with the coaches lately, I think it's a topic that needs to be brought up with just the way that the NBA is going and the way the league is sort of trending. Former players, right, having a leg up in the hiring process over other coaches, you know, in my opinion, I really think they should have a leg up. But unfortunately, right now, I feel like most GMs and front offices and ownership groups, everybody's into analytics. Everybody's trying to be, you know, the Oakland Athletics and the Billy Beans of the NBA for some reason, instead of, you know, just going to, you know, guys that know the game and guys that have played the game who can understand what the, you know, five guys out on the floor are going through and, you know, things like that. So I posed the question, should and do former players have a leg up in the hiring process? And I say, yes, they should, but no, they don't right now. I believe if my numbers are correct, there's seven current NBA coaches who are players. And I think that the issue for me really arose when the Minnesota Timberwolves fired Ryan Saunders, you know, right at the beginning of the season, and they hired Chris Finch from the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, it's their seventh head coach in the last 10 years. In those last 10 years, the best one for them in terms of coaching-wise has been Tom Thibodeau. He went 97-107. He coached in five playoff games. The last coach that they've had that's actually had an above 500 winning percentage was Flip Saunders on his first stint, who coached from, you know, 1995 to 2005. You know, he went 411 and 326, so just over, I think it was like a 588 winning percentage, went to 47 playoff games. So, you know, a team that just has literally been like, you know, the like most NFL teams that are at the bottom, flipping head coaches every other year, it seems like. I'm shocked that they hire Chris Finch from Toronto, don't really go through a formal process, and, you know, Chris Finch is already 0-5. We were just talking about it. He hasn't won a game since he's come on. Not that it's his fault necessarily, and I'm not saying that a former player would, you know, be 5-0 or anything like that, but it's just a valid point, in my opinion, to bring up that the hiring process with these NBA teams just seems to be whacked out right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on a lot of good pieces, but the first thing I want to bring up is the reasoning that the franchise itself on the Timberwolves has just been headed in a downward trend. We've seen players be very vocal about the fact that they do not want to go to Minnesota. Zach LaVine, when he got drafted to Minnesota, was just very you know, you saw it right on TV, what he said. And that's a place that it's a tough draw for players. So any new or old coach that has been on the Minnesota radar, they're in for a tough position. You know, you get hired and go to Minnesota, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm guessing the word from higher up is that, you know, do what you can this year, but, you know, we're really headed towards next year. We're looking to lock in that first overall pick. And how do you really grow as a coach knowing that is, you know, the overall message that's been delayed years and years? I mean, Jimmy Butler talked about how disappointed he was in Minnesota with the current work ethic and, you know, the drive of some players. He mentioned Karl Anthony Towns. I think Minnesota is just a situation where it's a dead end. I don't think a lot of coaches are going to do well there. At some point, they're going to find themselves back in the playoffs. But not to digress too far apart, but the overall talk of players being involved in coaching and higher up in GM positions, I think should be the way all other sports are. You know, players do know more. They've been around. They have a level of respect from players that are on the team or have been on the team. And they're just going to have an overall better grip of the locker room. And that's just my opinion on the topic. I think former players in football, former players in basketball just have a better ideal on how to motivate players and how to get them to the next level. You bring a guy in who, you know, he might know the game inside and out. He might have the best defensive scheme, the best offensive plays, but, you know, if he didn't even play D3 college basketball, guys are going to look at him a little sideways when he gets on people. You know, that's just the way it is. In terms of the hiring process, I'm not sure if there is one. It really, I mean, you see it in every job in the world. You know, there are people that are well tuned in with the higher ups, have a leg up, and, you know, maybe they walk through a 20-minute interview, but the end of the day, if you're already liked, you're probably going to have an advantage over somebody who might even be better fit for the job. You know, they have the resume. I think about the Steve Nash hiring in Brooklyn, and a lot of people are upset about it. But at the end of the day, Steve Nash is a 2-time MVP, 8-time All-Star, and point guards make the best coaches because they see the game from all different angles. And, you know, I think he's got a tough position knowing that he has KD, Kyrie, James Harden, and now Blake Griffin. It's jokes aside, I think the NBA isn't really a league that's fueled by coach success. It's player success, and the coach happens to be there. So
yeah,
I'll let you
talk
a little more about
personalities.
That. Absolutely.
It's a good segue into the next segment, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Let's dive right into it. We're talking about Steve Nash and his recent addition. That's Blake Griffin. Now, we all knew he was leaving Detroit at some point. We expected it to happen right around now. The recent news, the Detroit Pistons have bought out Blake Griffin, saved themselves about $12 million in giving up to Blake Griffin. And he has decided to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. I apologize. I'm about to say Knicks. Sorry, Knicks fans. And he's going to be joining alongside James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. The rich get richer. But the biggest part that I want to talk about is Lob City has gone to Brooklyn. DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin are back together with two of the best passers in the league in Kyrie Irving and James Harden. So I'm excited about that aspect of it. What are your takeaways, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I think Blake Griffin in a little bit smaller doses off the bench for the Nets could be, you know, pretty good. I'm shocked that he sacrificed the $13 million to leave the Pistons, you know. So I think it says a lot about what he wants to do, that he cares about winning, right? So that's good. It sounds like, you know, Brooklyn's getting someone that's motivated. And I mean, it's not like he was terrible for the Pistons. He was averaging just over 12 points and 5 rebounds a game in 20 games, you know, this season. So they're getting decent, you know, bench players here. And I think he's going to serve as a good backup off the bench because of depth issues behind Durant and DeAndre Jordan. But, you know, I don't expect him to be, you know, this guy playing 30, you know, minutes a game, averaging 15, 20 a game. And he's not that player anymore. He's older. He's had a ton of injuries. He's a little bit slower. He's not a great shooter either. I mean, he was only averaging, I think it was like 36% from the field and 31 from three. So it's not like Brooklyn's getting another outside threat. So, you know, we'll see how he does, but it's a good addition, but, you know, no, I don't think it's going to put them necessarily over the hill here. I think they're already there. So this is just kind of the cherry on top.
Yeah, I think that the addition adds a lot to them defensively. It gives them a little more toughness, a little more size inside, grab some weight rebounds. They've been going with a lot of small lineups, and, you know, there's times where Jeff Green is the biggest guy on the court. He's about 6'8 on a good day, and he's struggled with guarding opposing bigs. You know, that's a lot to ask out of someone that's used to playing on the wing, guarding guys of similar size, and, you know, he's being asked to guard 7-footers in the post and, you know, rip boards. That's a tough ask, and I think Blake Griffin is going to really help them down the stretch when they need to get stops. He's somebody that he's a ball hawk. He'll go after any rebound. He got a good body to him. He can defend in the post. And I think that's exactly why the Brooklyn Nets wanted to bring him in, is to help him out on the defensive end rather than offense. I mean, this team does not need any more offense. They got shooters, they got scorers, they got playmakers, and what you're really going to see with Blake Griffin is kind of a Draymond Green type role where, you know, he's going to be asked to distribute. He's going to be asked to defend 1-4. And that's really what the Brooklyn Nets need in order to get to that next level in terms of defensive ability. And that's exactly why I think Blake Griffin is going to be a great fit. And unfortunately, it's going to make things that much tougher for Boston Celtics fans on reaching the NBA Finals this year.
Right. What do you think, you know, Brooklyn gets Blake Griffin, right, shores up their, you know, front court, you know, being able to play behind Durant, DeAndre Jordan. But outside of that, what else do you think Brooklyn needs, if anything, one, and then two, in the buyout market, do you expect sort of like that year, I can't remember what year it was, but where it felt like every single buyout, regardless of the fit or not, was just going to the Golden State Warriors. And like you had all these guys on the bench. I think it was like the year that like Bogut signed, and Bogut was still a decent like player. And then I think like Boogie Cousins was on there. It was just like the rich get richer. And it's like, why are these players going there? You know, do you see that happening with Brooklyn?
I think what they need is a sports psychologist first. I think they need somebody that can calm down when tensions get high, because I do anticipate tensions will get high in Brooklyn at some point. But in all seriousness, I think they need just more depth. They need guys that, you know, they traded away a lot of height. And Jared Allen was a big part of that Brooklyn Nets success. You know, I think back to the days where they had D'Angelo Russell and Jared Allen, and that team was a solid team. They made it to the playoffs. They won some games when they made it there. And they're missing a lot of size and being able to score inside. They're a team with three superstars that can move the ball wherever they want, and they can hit tough shots. But it's the intangibles that this team's missing. They don't have somebody that can spell a Kevin Durant. They've struggled without him at some points this season. They need another player that can come and contribute, give some big bench minutes. I mean, how important is Lou Williams to the Los Angeles Clippers? He's somebody that's been a sixth man his whole life, and yet he is still playing productive minutes and usually plays down the stretch. A guy similar to a Lou Williams. I think of their bench, you know, they have Shamit. They got some other, I don't even want to call them like role minutes. They've just been developing players, and I think they just need somebody that can score coming in off the bench to give them late in the second, early first, just being able to give them some minutes. I mean, look, KD is not going to play every game this year, and who knows if he's going to be healthy come playoff time for the entirety of the playoffs. Kyrie might go on another hiatus. They need something to make up for these types of bad moments, all right? And that's where I can see. But as far as the Nets being the new famed attraction for all those heady veterans that are looking to get a ring, it's going to happen, especially when they're taking league minimums like Blake Griffin did. It's a team that's going to get a lot of the older players that are ring hungry.
Yeah. You know, one guy that stands out to me, and it's not like it's a position of need necessarily for Brooklyn, but one guy that I'd be, if they got him, which I don't think they can, but, you know, nothing's impossible in the NBA. But if they got Patrick Beverley, I'd be really afraid, because Beverley's that dude that just can come off the bench and give them really good minutes. And he's like a Marcus Smart, right? I would think Beverley and Smart, if you add them to the Brooklyn Nets, they become a defensive monster, offensive monster. Like they have everything, right? So again, I'm not sure how likely that is to happen, but like, you know, a guy like that, if it becomes available on the, you know, free agency list after a buyout, something like that, like that's scary. And, you know, we'll see, but Brooklyn's, the rest of the East has a long way to go to catch up to Brooklyn, fully healthy Brooklyn.
What do you think the relationship between Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving is? You think it's something that could be amended and, you know, they get reunited in the near future, or is this something that Kevin Love he rubbed him the wrong way and he never wants to play alongside him again?
You know, Kevin Love's a weird dude. I feel like I haven't heard him talk in years, like that nobody's really talked about him in terms of how he plays on Cleveland. And I don't feel like I've heard from him in such a long time. You know, I think ultimately are you saying in the context that he gets traded to Brooklyn and tries to help them?
I see Kevin Love in a similar situation like a Blake Griffin. I mean, he hasn't even suited up for the Cavs in I don't even know how long. You know, I think he's earned the reputation of being able to go to higher up, and it doesn't seem like he's money hungry at this point. I think he's probably just wants to get back in the limelight, and maybe he says, hey, this isn't working out. I mean, I'm not even playing for you anymore. You know, what do I got to do to go somewhere else? And maybe they buy him out. Maybe he waits till the off season, but I think he's going to be out in Cleveland soon. And I don't think the Lakers can take him on. I know he's good friends with LeBron still, but I think of a Brooklyn Nets as another scenario where it's a possibility. But the biggest question mark is where does he stand with Kyrie Irving? It's a weird situation because I know he was very disappointed. You know, he made the sticks and stones comment about Kyrie Irving when he sounded off on Cleveland, and it just doesn't seem like it's a situation where it would ever get reunited.
Yeah, I think it'd be tough to repair, but ultimately, I don't know. I think Kyrie would be okay if they were able to hash it out and just say, hey, we're here to win a championship and this is what we're going to do. I don't think it'll happen, but, you know, it could. But he's got 2 years and $60 million left on his deal, right? So tough move unless the Cavs buy him out. But I think more realistic trade scenario for Kevin Love, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but I think it's the off season for him.
Let's do it. Let's just reset the show real quick. I'm Ryan Beatty. That's Ryan Edwards on the other end. We're Ear to the Ground Sports, the Unsung Sports Grid. This is another Triple Threat Tuesday. Feel free to give us a call if you want to talk about anything, really. It's a down week this week, so we're open to anything that you guys are thinking. And give us a call in at 516-387-1702. Again, that's 516-387-1702. Let's go on to the next segment that, you know, the Blake Griffin and the Kevin Loves have created. Is, are we buying and selling some of the biggest names here on where they want to be? There's a lot of guys out there that are on teams that are headed nowhere, and this is usually the time of year when they get moved, and it happens quite quick. To go off that with Kevin Love, a recent talk is with the Dallas Mavericks. I think of the Mavericks as a team that it's kind of on the cusp of, you know, making it to that next level. Are they a team that makes a move for Kevin Love?
I don't think it makes sense for them. Like, I think if they deal Porzingis, then sure, I could see it being a decent fit. I don't think they're going to deal Porzingis. I just don't see it. And I don't know what Dallas is doing. I mean, they got to put someone around Luka because Porzingis hasn't played much. You know, I don't know what's going on at Dallas. I trust Mark Cuban, though, that he can right that ship because he's not a guy that's going to sit around and wait, especially with Luka on his team. I think he knows what he has there. So we'll see. But, I mean, even if Love comes to Dallas, I mean, I think Love is not a top three, like a big three type guy anymore. I think if you have a big three on your team, he's number four or five, you know, somewhere in that range. And, you know, a guy that either starts and gives you good minutes and, you know, might average 15 to 16 a game starting, or, you know, maybe 15 off the bench, you know, playing 28 minutes a game, something like that, you know. But I don't know what his deal is, but I think I go back to what I just said. Kevin Love, I think, just gets dealt by Cleveland in the offseason. I think that's the most likely scenario. I can't see Cleveland unloading him at the deadline.
I want to go off on Mark Cuban a little bit right now because I don't think he's doing a good enough job on what you just said. He's not pairing Luka with really any talent around him. I look at their current contracts. Tim Hardaway Jr. is a good player, right? He's a good role player in my eyes, but he's making $18 million a year. That's a lot of money that could be given to maybe a better asset like a Victor Oladipo, like a PJ Tucker, someone along those lines. And then I look down and they got James Johnson for $16 million. James Johnson, to me, probably shouldn't be making more than $6 million a year. That might just be me being frugal and not actually knowing his true potential. But I don't think Mark Cuban's doing a good enough job on a once-in-a-generation player on being able to sell him to stay with Dallas. I think Kristaps Porzingis was a good effort. He had a lot of potential when he got there, but now he's on the move. It seems like he's on his way out, and someone's unhappy there. I think Dallas is a team that could easily take the league by storm if they signed one or two big names, you know, a Julius Randle a couple of years ago. If they signed him, they knew Luka was a star then. That would have been a big addition for them. I have to call out Mark Cuban. I don't think he's doing a good enough job on growing that franchise.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And Tim Hardaway Jr. and James Johnson, I think those massive contracts come off the books at the end of this year. So I envision Dallas being super aggressive this offseason in free agency and the draft. What would you think about this? Do you think – pairing Luka with Ben Simmons would be a decent idea. I know Luka on the Mavs depth chart plays point guard, but let's face it, Luka's not a point guard, even though he's very good at playing point guards. He's not. He should be a small forward. And you pair him with Ben Simmons, and then you go out and, you know, get a big guy like a Steven Adams from New Orleans, and then you add a couple good bench players, that can shoot the ball. I think of like Evan Fournier or even like an Aaron Gordon type. You know, you go out and get those type of guys, spend some money, and now you've built a team around Luka.
I think it's a great match. In a perfect world, I think Ben Simmons is the exact opposite of what Luka Doncic is, as he's a much better defender, he's a much better passer, and Luka's a much better scorer. So I think they would spell each other perfectly and could really work together on the same court. The only thing is, I don't think the Mavericks have enough pieces in order to make that deal happen. I think they have...
Yep.
Kristaps that's on the move and probably some draft picks, but I mean, James Harden didn't even push the needle with a Ben Simmons trade. So I'm not so sure the Mavericks have enough pieces in order to make that deal. And I don't think Philly's in a position where they need to get rid of them. I don't think they're a championship team, but there's a lot of rumors on guys that want to play for Doc and they want to play in Philly, just knowing that, you know, they have a lot of potential, but a move where, you know, maybe Kristaps goes, and I don't think Kristaps and Joel Embiid is a workable team. That's just kind of two guys doing the same thing, and they don't really have any guard play at that point. So it would make sense for the Mavericks. I don't think it makes sense for the 76ers.
Let me throw a name out here for you that we're about to talk about anyways during this segment. Lonzo Ball.
I think Lonzo Ball has found his home. He's gotten better year after year. The amount of muscle that he put on in a couple of years, he came in the league really skinny. You could tell that he was not confident in his shot. He was not defending at a high level. He was always a spectacular passer, and he's pretty athletic. That was always something that got him to the league, but he has taken a lot of steps forward. And I think the Pelicans are a young franchise. They have Zion, they have Brandon Ingram, two guys that are going to grow together for probably the next 4 or 5 years. And that's where I think Lonzo might be the point guard of the future. I don't think they drafted Kira Lewis this year, and it seems like it's still Lonzo's job. They tested him, and Lonzo kind of came out on top. So I think that the Pelicans are going to live with what they have and kind of move on different aspects of their team. I don't see Lonzo getting moved in the near future.
Well, see, I think the only thing with Lonzo, right, is New Orleans has to make a decision. His contract situation, he's got a qualifying offer of $14 million as a base salary, but it's got a cap hit of $29 million. So, New Orleans isn't going to – they're either going to restructure that and hack out a long-term deal, or they're going to deal him, you know. And they have Eric Bledsoe, right? And it's like, okay, well, are you going to go with Bledsoe as a point instead of a shooting guard? Or, you know, are you going to stick with Lonzo, give him the contract, and go from there? But, yeah, I mean, I think Lonzo's an interesting one. I'm not overpaying. He's played really well of late, but I'm not going to overpay just because he's played well as of late. He's not a bad point guard by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not a top-tier point guard, in my opinion, to overpay. I just wouldn't do it. But if it takes maybe like a future first round pick, you know, for a late first to get him, you know, and like a, you know, some young guy that really isn't, you know, has some potential, but like, you know, isn't a superstar right now, would I do it? Sure. You know, I'd take him. But I think he's an interesting situation waiting to happen there in New Orleans. And I wonder what they're going to do here at the deadline.
It's a tough decision for sure, and you know Big Baller Brand is going to expect the max deal. if he has any voices in his ears, I'm going ahead and say that he's going for the money. But I mean, his career was kind of completely uplifted. I mean, he was a kid and he had the dream and he was on the Lakers, but that officially didn't work out. He underperformed those first couple of years. And they quickly moved on from him. So I would hope that, you know, New Orleans has given him this rebirth and has really drove him to who he is today. And I hope that sits well with him. And I want him to stay in New Orleans because I think they could eventually, you know, get over that hump with those three staying there in New Orleans. So let's move on to another name that I absolutely hate hearing the most recent rumors. It's Larry Nance Jr. There's been rumors of the Heat, the Mavericks, the Celtics. I hope the Celtics stay far away from him. This is one of those guys that there's no aspect of his game that really blows my mind because he's 6'7". He's not polished offensively. He's a good shot blocker, but he's not a great defender. And this is just putting another Daniel Tice, another Tristan Thompson, who's worse offensively and defensively on our roster. He's 6'7". We need a 7-footer. Okay. We need somebody that this move would make absolutely no sense to me because then we have now three guys on a roster that ideally do the same thing. Tristan Thompson is a more of a bruiser, but I don't want another 6'7" big that really can't do anything inside other than, you know, dunk on everybody every now and then.
Yeah, no, it's a hard pass for me from a Celtics perspective. And frankly, any other team, I don't know why anybody would want to acquire this guy. He's got 2 years and $20 million left on his deal, so it's going to take some assets to get him. And Cleveland's going to ask for it. I saw like a back end of the first round type pick to get him. I know he's only 28, but that's an overpay. He's not worth that, and he hasn't played since February 6th. He's got a fractured finger. So you don't really know what you're getting, right? So it's a hard pass on Nance Jr. for me. I think there's better guys out there. And frankly, on the Boston Celtics, I'm not going after a big like him. I'm going after, you know, guys that can score on the bench. We need more bench scoring, people that can provide a spark off the bench and score 15, 20 a night. So we don't need Larry Nance Jr. in my opinion at all. So they stay far, far away from Danny Ainge.
It's weird because it seems like he's a guy that it's Daniel Tice and a Robert Williams if they had a kid. Like, that's just the way I think of him. And he doesn't do anything as well as Robert Williams in terms of jumping and being able to play above the rim. And Daniel Tice, he's come along as a shooter. I don't think Larry Nance Jr. has come along as a shooter. So that's a tough one for me. But let's move on to a move that I think is very necessary, and that is Victor Oladipo to the Golden State Warriors. Steph needs help, man. He is doing a lot this year, and I don't think the Golden State Warriors are in a position where they need to completely rebuild. They have Klay Thompson coming back next year. You know, we don't really know what shape he's going to be in, but I can tell you he's still going to be able to shoot the ball. They're still going to have enough talent to make the playoffs in the West. And a piece like Victor Oladipo to give them another scoring option along with Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Oubre, I think that's a good roster in terms of a 7 or 8 seed in Golden State. And, you know, giving Steph a shot in the playoffs is exactly what they need to do. I think they absolutely need to make this move if they can make it work financially, because I didn't even look into his contract and what they would possibly be taking as a hit. But I think this team needs to make a move for another scorer to help Steph out.
Yeah. I think, honestly, Oladipo's market comes down to two teams, and that's the Warriors and that's the Knicks. And I think if you're the Knicks, you have to ask yourself, are we in or are we out? You're 19-18, fourth in the Atlantic Division, but you're right up there in the Eastern Conference. You've got Tom Thibodeau that's completely changed this team and culture around. And I know Oladipo's a rental, but if I'm the Knicks, I'm going all out. You know, I would – the Knicks with their current depth chart right now, starters are Elfrid Payton, Reggie Bullock, R.J. Barrett, Julius Randle, and Nerlens Noel. You take out Bullock and you add in Oladipo in there, and that's a pretty damn good starting five, in my opinion, with the way that Julius Randle's playing. R.J. Barrett's a great player. He's a good young player. Elfrid Payton's a decent point guard. You've got Derrick Rose backing him up, Emmanuel Quickley coming off the bench. You know, you've got a decent, you know, bench there to back that up. So if I'm the Knicks, I'm going all out and trying to swoop in and grab Oladipo before the Warriors do. I would do it if I'm the Knicks.
I mean, I'm a little surprised that Victor Oladipo hasn't been moved yet. I know he's made it pretty clear to Houston that he does not want to be there full time, and Houston's on its way into a situation where they need to get a top three pick. So I'm surprised that, you know, they haven't gotten a little thing, because he's a high valued player. I think of him in Bradley Beal as probably the two best that might be available in the NBA right now. And I'm surprised. I wonder if teams are calling and the Rockets are being stubborn about it, or they just, you know, teams aren't calling. You know, maybe they can't find a roster spot or can't make the contract work. But I'm just very surprised that he has not been moved yet. But we'll see what happens. I think a lot of teams will eventually get cold feet and know that they need to make a move in order to strengthen their roster.
Well, so that's the thing, right? You look at the Western Conference and you say, okay, 1 through 8, you've got the Jazz, Suns, Lakers, Clippers, Trailblazers, Nuggets, Spurs, and Mavericks, right? That's your 1 through 8 seed. What team there can, one, pull off a trade for Oladipo, and two, who really needs him out of those eight, right? And then there's the Warriors, and they're only half game outside of the 8 seed, so it makes sense. But then when you look at the East, right, you've got so many of these teams that, you know, literally the 8 seed, you know, every single seed is within a couple games of each other. I think the 3 and the 4 seed, the Bucks to the Celtics, is the biggest gap at 3 games. You know, the Bucks are 2 back in the first place. Celtics are 5. And then 4 through 12, really, and I wouldn't even count the Wizards, they're all within a couple games of each other. So it's like the Eastern Conference, they've got to be blowing up, you know, Houston to get Oladipo. I can't imagine that an Eastern Conference, that he doesn't go to an Eastern Conference team or the Warriors. I don't think there's any other competition in the West that needs him or wants him or has the assets to get him. So you're looking at a bunch of teams in the East, and the Warriors is really his market. So I see maybe Houston trying to say, okay, let's wait for things to shake out right in the Eastern Conference. We know that the Warriors are going to be there no matter what, right? Nothing's going to change with them unless they, you know, drop 10 in a row before the trade deadline, which isn't going to happen. But let's see how things shake out the East, and then see who out of those contenders really wants them. What are they asking for? And create some supply and demand here. I think it's smart on Houston.
We got a caller.
And
it's
going to come down to the last day.
We got a caller that I'm going to accept right now.
Oh, all right.
Caller, what's going on, man? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Hal. From the middle of nowhere.
There he is.
AKA Northern New Jersey.
I knew this was happening. What's going on, Lou?
I'm just reading an article right now. They've announced the nominations for the Naismith Hall of Fame, and most of it's a good list, but I'm not sure it's all good.
Yeah, who's striking your fancy?
Well, let's see. We got Paul Pierce. That's obvious. Chris Webber. Ben Wallace, I don't know about Bosch, though.
Yeah, Bosch is he's right on the line for me. I'm not. I think
yeah.
His playing career getting cut short hurts him.
Yeah, well, that's due to injuries, of course. But still, I mean, not. I mean, I don't think he's really that great.
Yeah, I mean, guys who didn't. So I think the question here or the conversation here is there's nominees who didn't make the cut for the 21 class, and,
right.
And that's Chauncey Billups and Richard Hamilton. To me, that stands out. I mean. For Chris Bosch to make it and those two guys not to, I mean, seems a little ridiculous to me, in my opinion. And even Chris Webber, I love Chris Webber.
Better college player.
Yeah, I would take out Webber and Bosch and insert Chauncey Billups and Richard Hamilton easily over those guys. Mm-hmm. So it blows my mind that they didn't make it. But, you know, what can you do?
Well, I think
Hall
maybe they need to rethink
the new talk on, you know, the latest drama of sports. It seems like they aren't really getting these decisions right every now and then. But I gotta throw out another name. Why is Jay Wright getting inducted into the Hall of Fame or being a candidate? He didn't do anything in the league. Am I wrong?
No.
Let me look a little.
Not at all.
I mean. What, is he going to be in the Hall of Fame for being an analyst?
Yeah, I think it's for being a coach. And I just I don't get that for being a two-time NCAA champion as Villanova's coach. Like, that just seems watered down, in my opinion. Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like a stretch.
It's
going to
be fun,
you know?
Saturday night now for my show.
Yeah, it just seems like a stretch knowing that, you know, they have a lot of names knocking on the door and they're, like, reaching for people, basically, by bringing in Jay Wright. That's an interesting
coach.
Bill Russell's in there as a coach right now. He's just a finalist, you know, NBA's first black head coach, back-to-back championships to the Celtics in 68 and 69. I mean, just Bill Russell making it in as a coach and a player.
Before I was born.
That's going to be interesting.
Just before I was born.
Lou, who would you like?
That's a tough one. But I agree with most of them. I'm just not too crazy about Bosch being in there. You know, most of it I agree with. I mean, you can't rule out Paul Pierce, even though I'm not a Celtic fan, but, you know, still he deserves to be there. Much to my dismay of the Celtics. Yeah.
I agree.
Pierce is
a
borderline. I can admit
year.
That Pierce is borderline.
I think he's in there just because of that 08 run. You know, he dealt with a lot before that 08 run on, you know, the current roster that he had on the Celtics, and he just had way too much success in order to kind of push him out. The thought of Chris Bosch is weird because he was, you know, he was a really good player in Toronto. He made the move to go to Big Three in Miami, and I think that should have hurt him because he really, you know, he was a good player in Miami, but he wasn't a great one. And, you know, his career got cut short, unfortunately. You know, the blood clots in his lungs, but
blood clot.
Did he do enough? Did he do enough in order to cement, you know, a couple years out that he's a Hall of Famer?
No, I don't think
so. No.
Not
my you look at when you think of all-time greats from a power forward perspective or even center, whatever category you want to put them in, I mean, Chris Bosch just doesn't stand out to me. It just doesn't.
Nope.
Now, you look at a guy like Ben Wallace. You know, Ben Wallace, never really a great offensive player. But that man, one of the greatest defensive centers in the history of basketball. I mean, that guy was, an absolute
undersized
beast
too.
For Detroit. Yeah. Yep.
He was undersized. That Pistons team, man, that team was fun to watch. You talked about Billups and Rip Hamilton. That team going against the Lakers, those were some good days.
That was a great team. What was that? Billups, Richard Hamilton, Tayshaun
yeah.
Prince, Ben Wallace,
yeah.
and Rasheed Wallace. I mean,
yeah.
What a starting five.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that was quite the team. They had Rodney Stuckey coming off the bench.
Yep, Stuckey off the bench. They had a good one. They had a good run.
I got a side question. You know, that Pistons team
yeah.
versus the Bad Boys of Detroit, which team was better? That's my question. You know, the Isaiah Thomas and the Dennis Rodman and Bill Laimbeer team versus that team that went to the finals.
Yeah, that's well.
Well, you can't forget the 89-90 Pistons. You can't forget that.
But do you think they were better
yeah.
than that Pistons team?
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I can.
Really?
I mean, they were good. They were good, but I don't think they were a team that like lit teams up on the scoring table. I mean, Dumars and Thomas were great, but you know they were kind of limited on scoring. You know, they played great defense and you know arguably illegal defense, but it worked out for them and they beat a tough team in the Bulls and the Celtics back in the day. Those were two teams that pretty much were unbeatable. I think about that Pistons team as a more complete roster, just in the starting lineups at least. But I could be wrong. You know, we're never going to know. But
yeah,
I appreciate you calling in, Lou.
My pleasure, fellas. And if you get a chance on Saturday, call my show if you can, the Enhanced Sports Show. Saturdays, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Number to call is 512-543-4662.
Step awesome. Me one more time, Lou. I'm going to write it down this time.
Sure. The Enhanced Sports Show, Saturdays 5 to 7 on the East Coast. The number to call is 512-543-4662.
Perfect. All right, Lou. I appreciate it. And best of luck to your Knicks and Nets.
Hey, we're getting there.
All right, so that was Lou, our weekly call-in. He's one of our biggest fans, and I appreciate his time every time he calls in. If you guys are on, feel free to check out his show next Saturday. But let's talk about the last segment of our show here. Let's break in for a little mid-season accolades. In my opinion, current most improved player award has to be Zach LaVine. I think he's somebody that has really taken that next step on a Chicago Bulls team that's really struggling. You know, 28.7 points per game, 52% field goal percentage, 43% field goal three percentage, and you know he's just being very efficient. He's got a 61.5 in efficiency rating, and this is a guy that's really turning into, you know, we saw him in the All-Star game. He's turning into one of the best in the league. My only criticism of him is as of late, he hasn't been clutch down the stretch. You know, the Bulls are in a lot of games. He takes a lot of shots near the end of the game and he hasn't been hitting them. And they've been losing a lot of games recently. I think about the Nuggets. I think about the Portland Trailblazers game where he basically had the chance to win those games very easily and they kind of just flip-flopped on him. But I do believe he is the most improved player in the NBA this year. And, you know, if he's a free agent anytime soon, any team would be lucky to have him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Zach LaVine is a good pick. I went with Jeremy Grant of Detroit. I actually was going back and forth between Grant and Christian Wood. I just look at, you know, you look at LaVine, right? And the only knock, so to speak, on him for most improved player is that he's had that natural progression over the last 3 years, you know, 23 points a game in 18, 19, 25.5 last year, and then 28 this year. So it's been like that gradual progression. Whereas, you know, I view the most improved NBA player award to be someone that's really taken a huge leap forward from kind of what they were, right? And I look at Jeremy Grant. Last year, this dude's averaging 12 points and 3.5 rebounds a game. He's up to 23 points a game, 5 rebounds, just under 3 assists. You know, a game, I think he's severely elevated his game. And then even Christian Wood, right? 13 points a game last year, 6 rebounds, just under a block a game. This year, he's up to 22 points, 10 rebounds, block and a half per game. So I look at those stats and say, man, those guys have taken huge leaps forward in terms of their stats, where it's not that Zach LaVine hasn't, but I think LaVine's on that kind of natural progression, whereas Grant and Wood have taken those huge leaps forward that kind of stand out to you from a statistics perspective.
I agree. Zach LaVine has been very good for the last couple of years. I think Christian Wood, that injury is really going to hurt him. He was really just starting to come into the star in Houston, and he hurt his ankle and he missed a lot of time, and I think that's going to hurt him in the long run of being considered for this award. Unfortunately, Jeremy Grant has really came. He's been in the league for a good amount of time, and now he's just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he handed the Celtics a loss. He handed the Lakers a loss. He has been playing really well, and I was wondering if he's somebody that's available. You know, it seems the Pistons want to rebuild, but do they deal somebody like a Jeremy Grant, knowing that he is their best player and he's kind of on the younger part of his career? When can they build around him or with him type situation? I'm interested to see if he becomes available in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, you look at him, right? He's been with Philly, Oklahoma City, Denver, now Detroit. He really hasn't found a home. He's a second-round draft pick, 39th overall by Philly. So it's not like he, was this guy coming out of Syracuse that had a ton of, upside potential and was talked about all the time, right? So it's definitely taken him a longer time to kind of get going. But the kid's only 26. He's on a longer-term contract. I believe he signed a 3-year deal with Detroit, pretty good money. And this year, he's averaging – I think any team would take his 23 a game. He's shooting 43 from the field, 36 from three-point. I think defensively he's pretty good too. I saw some rumors that Danny Ainge was in love with him and wanted him on the team. I'd take him in a heartbeat if I was the Celtics. I'm not sure exactly where he'd fit there, but I think there's room for him just because I think Grant, Jaylen Brown, and Tatum seem sort of a little bit repetitive, but it's not like I wouldn't take him.
Yeah, I mean, I would take him in a heartbeat as well. It seems like Danny Ainge likes being in the talks, but, until an offer is presented to the media or something along those lines, I don't know if I believe him every time, because the Celtics are circled around on almost every player that's up for grabs. And it seems like, oh, the Celtics are drawing interest, but then it falls through. You know what I mean? So I want to know.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen, but I want to know, what did he offer? Did they just pick up the phone and say Jeremy Grant and they said no? Or was he offering, I got this many picks. I got Romeo Langford. I got this for you. I want to know what he's offering, because you never want to hear it, knowing that the players are going to backlash if their name's thrown up. If Marcus Smart, somebody that's been thrown around in trade rumors, you don't want it to get out. But I don't know. I want to know if Danny Ainge is being for real, if he's actually making moves, or is he just saying, oh, yeah, we have interest.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation that will probably never come out, but I want to know.
Well, let me ask you this. If you had to put $1,000 down right now on an over-under bet on Danny Ainge to make 1.5 deals by the trade deadline, would you go over or under?
Under. 100% under. Because
yep.
I do believe that he is in talks, but, we don't know if that's anything that could eventually happen. You know, there was rumors when James Harden was going around that, you know, the Celtics have presented offers. But, like, realistically, that was probably never going to happen unless we gave up our whole team for him. So, like, obviously people had interest in James Harden, but we were not one of the teams that was a front runner for him because, you know, we probably didn't present a valuable offer to the Rockets. So I wonder if that's what's been going on with these kinds of deals, or is this something that, you know, maybe I'm just completely overlooking and he's going to bang, bang, bang near the trade deadline and we're going to be a finals candidate. Like, I don't know. It's too unpredictable.
Yeah, I don't like the one thing I don't like hearing that's coming out of that camp and from him directly is that they feel like the TPE, that exception, is better used in the off season than it is at the deadline here. And that's scary because then you really pigeonhole yourself right into, okay, now you've got a deadline to use that thing and it's gone if you don't. And then you're going up against teams that have money to spend and there's more competition, like things like that, right? If I'm Danny, I think you really, really have to take a good look at trying to just make a swing for the fences at this point. You got to do it. And I hate the lip service that we always get. Well, you know, we're looking and, you know, we want to make deals. Deals just aren't out there. You know, teams are asking for a lot. And it's like, look, dude, just shut up and get it done. Just get something done, you know?
I mean, so that's alarming to the point where I think as Celtics fans, people are kind of realizing, you know, maybe this isn't our year. And, you know, if we don't use that trade player exemption before the deadline, I think that's exactly what that is saying from upper management is, you know, maybe we're not as good as everyone thinks. Because, you know, if we use it on a valuable asset like a Vucevic or a Victor Oladipo, if that works out financially, that makes our team that much better, in my opinion. And, you know, that shows that we are going for a championship. He's getting to the point where we don't really know where his head's at with this team. All we really know is that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are untouchable. We don't know if he thinks we're a contender, if he thinks that, you know, one move can really push us ahead. But I think there's just too many names out there with limited destinations, and we have got to be one of them, knowing that we have a trade player exemption. I think he has to use
Absolutely.
It before the deadline.
Yep, I completely agree. And sadly, it just really worries me that we're not going to. But, you know, we've got, what, 17 days? I think the deadline's the 26th.
We'll see what happens. And hopefully we have more news for you next week. I'm Ryan Beatty.
Yep.
We got Ryan Edwards on the other end. Another Triple Threat Tuesday. Hopefully we got some more action for you next week, knowing that some games are going to go by, some teams are going to lose, some teams are going to win. But we're here to the Ground Sports. We're here every Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. And we're going to come fast and hard, knowing that some trade deadline talk is going to be up and at them in the next couple of days. So, Ryan, as always, I appreciate your time. Let's see you next week.
All right. Good talking again, Ryan. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty.